We've spoken here on the program a few times about an inevitability of the future.
Yes.
Nick, the robots are coming.
I know. I've been concerned about this since the middle of high school. I read those books, those sci-fi books.
Well, that's
books.
The thing, right? We've all thought about it, seen it, the Jetsons, whatever, over many, many years. But are we now on the edge of an absolute revolution? One of Australia's biggest shopping centre chains is trialling robot cleaners at the DFO in Homebush.
Yeah.
The owner of the shopping centre, Vicinity Centres, I think it is, says that if successful, these robot cleaners will enable the company to redeploy their current cleaning contractors. Cut short, it has the potential to save them a lot of money.
Redeploy, that's a nice trendy term, meaning now, what's that mean? Move them on somewhere else?
I think it
jobs?
Probably does, yes. Change the hours, reduce them and whatnot.
I don't like
Consider
it.
The impact driverless trucks could have on the economy. On the one hand, using data from the USA, it's predicted that driverless trucks could save the economy $168 billion a year and reduce the road toll by thousands. On the other hand, there's 3.5 million truck drivers in the USA, so making truck driving the single biggest occupation in 29 US states.
That's extraordinary.
So what will they do if a robot takes their gig? It's a really interesting question and one we've been thinking about here for a little while. What will all of this technology mean for blue-collar jobs? Professor Katina Michael is with the School of Computing and IT at the University of Wollongong. She studies the point where society collides with technology, and she joins us now on Talking Technology. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening. Good to be with you both.
Now, let's start with the robotic cleaners currently being trialled in these shopping centres. Can robots actually do a better job than in cleaning than humans can?
I think sometimes we have to look at context. And the clean fix machine, which is a chunky piece of equipment, I'd love to let loose on a very large open floor where there is not lots of debris, there aren't lots of rubbish bins around, for example, per desk. And if it's an open floor plan, the cleaning is happening at night, why not deploy it?
Yeah.
I think it becomes a different scenario when we're talking about office blocks or children or parents or families actually at a shopping centre during the day.
Mm. And I think that's the critical thing here. We can get absolutely overexcited about these kind of things. So then the question comes, quite obviously, how long do you think it is before robots could be better, in this case, cleaners, than humans?
I think we're all seeing the introduction in our homes. I went to Bingley last week, and of course there were five or six different types of Roombas there surfacing and enticing us to buy. I mean, we all have dishwashers, we all have washing machines.
Yeah.
It's not going to be long before these types of bots are doing everyday cleaning tasks and actually possibly better than we are ourselves. The question, however, is when we look at longer-term implications and we're looking at large-scale workforces being replaced by these machines, what are we doing in the process to ready ourselves for this change? And it's all good and well to innovate, but the process requires us to think ahead and say, well, how do we reskill and what do we do with these displaced persons?
So do you think then, given that robots can and probably will do equal or better jobs than humans at some point, is cleaning one of the jobs that will disappear in the next generation?
It sure is, and it already has disappeared to some extent. Most of us aren't washing dishes, and we're not washing our clothes by hand. So it's only natural that we're going to go towards a service model, which is possibly renting out these machines that do the cleaning for us. However, I must state, as a caveat, my mother was a cleaner for many years at various contract locations.
Yeah.
And she did describe the different types of contexts she'd come up against every night. And sometimes it's not going to be done by a clean fix. It just can't. It needs human intervention. And that's where these things can't do everything. And I warn ahead, you know, it looks like a better economic decision to replace humans. It looks easier. It looks like they're not going to complain and there's no health insurance requirements and cover care and workplace cover. But in actual fact, to maintain these machines and to actually power them up and then to re-battery power them up and have multi-room navigation and have somebody in charge that knows what they're doing and skill them, that's not easy and that's not always going to be perfect. Machines fail as well, and they fail worse than humans sometimes.
Professor Katina, so back to those American statistics, right? So data indicates that if they go ahead at some point in time and do driverless trucks, the upside is, the claim is, that the road tolls down by thousands, the economy saves $168 billion a year. So that's a saving monetarily, but at what cost does that come? You know, what
That's exactly the scenario. I mean, 3 million transport drivers in the US, 70 million worldwide. And we're not just talking about truck drivers, we're talking about bus drivers and a whole bunch of other transportation vehicles. I mean, we already have the deployment of driverless buses in small size in Europe. What are the real costs? Well, what do these people who are currently at risk, and one in two people are at risk of losing their jobs, overtaken by robots, blue and white-collar workers by 2050, what are these people going to do? You know, stand around and say, well, I'll just get paid by a bot. I won't do anything. I'll stay at home and I'll be unemployed. And, of course, that won't impact the society. There won't be any social disorder. And, of course, there won't be massive income inequality. Well, that's bogus. Of course there is going to be massive inequality. And when people are not working and they're not busy, what are they doing? Usually conducting crime.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we can say on paper, on a spreadsheet, on a business plan and a business case, this looks like a great idea because our company's going to save X. But in actual fact, the implications and consequences on society, the risks and harm are much greater.
So thinking about the truck driver example and the staggering amount of employment that could be turned overnight, is this actually a generational change, or is this potentially an overnight thing for the trucking industry? As an example, once autonomous trucks are approved and working and viable, do the companies just roll them out, you know, within a year, and is there mass unemployment, or is it actually something that occurs over such a period of time? You mentioned 2050, that mass unemployment isn't a risk, and actually it's more about the future generations doing other things.
No, the risk is to our generation, and these things can be deployed overnight. I mean, what's the? My friends are actually in taxis in Europe that are driverless.
Wow!
So this is not yesterday's topic. And the one of my colleagues said, I felt a swaying in the vehicle, going from sort of left in the straight lane to right. And she said, I did wonder, there was a human in the front of the seat, and then she knocked because it was like a limo style taxi. And she said, well, can you get this turbulence to stop? And of course, he turned off the auto drive. And that was on an autobahn going very quickly. So let's just say these are here now. This is not a 2050 issue. In 2050, half of us will have our current jobs. I mean, teachers are already being told they're obsolete because there are programs out there that let the students guide them through, and marking is better by machines than by people. But when we get back to cars, I mean, what's to stop Uber, who's come into the market, displace the current taxi system in Australia so rapidly? And then say, well, you know, drivers, all of you who went out and got your own cars and, you know, thanks very much for helping us with the disruption, but guess what? We don't need you anymore either. We've got these things called driverless taxis.
No doubt that's their plan. No doubt at all. Really.
Get rid of the driver. Get rid of the human. And economics dictates, unfortunately, and that's my premise here. We're not thinking about the social consequences, and we have to. Yeah,
and I guess what I'm hearing from you is that as a society, we're not ready. We're not prepared for that. We haven't even given it a second thought yet.
No, we're not. We're great at innovating, of course, and we're great at being faster, cheaper, better, allegedly. But people are saying, oh, well, don't worry about that. You know, in the past, we can look at the horse, and the horse was replaced by the telegraph, and the telegraph was, you know, replaced by this and that. And then we had the cars. But what's happening now is a faster speed of change, which says, I no longer have the capacity to introduce new jobs that we'll replace the jobs that I've axed. We're going too quick. And with this mode of change is an inability to keep up with the change. I mean, I love change. My work is all about change. I'm a technology innovation guru. But the question is, when does it become a mindful decision that says, yes, I should replace people in context, and it is the best thing to do, as opposed to what will I do with those people that I have replaced? And I'd love to believe the shopping centre and the vicinity centres who are saying we're going to reskill our current people. It's fantastic to hear this dialogue. But my concern is that these people will be in either less mundane jobs or over time be placed in situations where they can't continue working in that workplace.
Katina, look, it's clear to see that in the example of, say, Fukushima, to send in robots to do the work of a person in a high-risk area is a good thing. So how do you see managing the introduction of robots into the greater workspace happening? What would you like to see happen?
Like we have current assessments on things. You know, if we go ahead with IT innovation, we have a risk assessment. We have a privacy impact assessment. We have various cost assessments being done. That's one way. We also need to actually build in and get ready with curricula to enable the people who are being displaced through the vet system or through some other system, a vocational system or universities, how are we going to introduce, for those people who don't have the aptitude to reskill, what are we going to do with these people? And what kinds of training are we going to introduce? So we have longer-term views and forget these short windows, which are economically based. We've got KFC and Baidu rolling out facial recognition in China to look at historical patterns. We've got Amazon Go saying, you don't need an identity anymore. You just come in and we'll do facial recognition and everyone will be fine. We call centers and we're talking to bots and we don't even know we're talking to bots through the chatbot system. And my biggest sadness that I'm seeing is that people have this, you know, we said that we're building robots to do that, what we do, that they mimic us, that they look like us even, humanoid robots. But in actual fact, I think, guys, we're actually becoming a lot like the robots, you know, shorter messages, looking at our phones all the time, not talking to people, not wanting to have a face-to-face conversation, avoiding X or Y because self-service is faster and then I don't have to talk to anyone, I can go home. And then what do? We go home and we look at more bots and more internet and more phones. And I think there needs to be a bigger discussion here.
Yeah.
You know, people are talking about robot rights. Well, what about human rights? What happened to that?
Professor Katina Michael from the School of Computing and IT at the University of Wollongong, I'm curious, just finally, you mentioned a couple of times business cases and the financial case. I've worked in organisations where, you know, you put together a two-page business case, you follow it up with a six-page analysis, and if you can show that it makes money, it's approved by the board. Are there examples, or do we need to find more examples, where the simple financial case doesn't stack up in the long term because of other things other than finance, or, in fact, that it is the finance that's poorly planned because of the unknowns of this kind of technological innovation? If we find those things, could we not make a better case for slowing down this radical change?
So firstly, most people will say to me, Katina, it's a misnomer that you can slow down change and you can stop science and that, you know, innovation is there to stay. Of course it is. We've been innovating since humans came to Earth, right? From everything from the stone to the knife to the wheel and so forth. But I think you're talking about something very important, which is the side effects that you actually can't monetize. Mm. They're not tangible. You know, we've spit out things like return on investment, and we spit on things like net present value and other financial statistics and economic statistics, and we say this is viable because NPV is greater than zero. I mean, that was my bread and butter for many years in telecoms. Mm. What I realized over my industry experience was, in fact, there are some things called intangibles, which are things like social implications, welfare, and unemployment, even if I don't take the statistics of unemployment or hidden unemployment. And it's about people's well-being. Mm. And machines are great at a repetitive task. They're not so good at all in novel decision-making that is required on the fly. And so as a broad brush, I'd say, when we see repetitive tasks being done in society, we should be thinking those jobs will definitely be replaced by robots. That is inevitable. We're not going to stop that.
Yeah.
However, I wouldn't want to drum up to my local councillor and say, I'm feeling depressed this week, and then talk to a bot. I wouldn't want to go to a marriage registry and say, I'm marrying my bot. I wouldn't want to go to a hairdresser and have my hair cut by a bot. And these are the kinds of things. And I don't want to be taught by a bot. I mean, I want to be taught by a teacher, somebody that can mentor and has empathy. And I think that's the thing that we're not actually putting into these spreadsheets, because we don't know how to at the moment, is the intangibles.
Professor, brilliant stuff. You are a bright mind. We need more like you. When are you heading to Canberra?
Any day. I'm there for brave conversations, actually. Be there 10th and 11th of April. Going to be a great conference being hosted by Interstitia. You can find them on braveconversations.com.
Wow.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for your time.
Cheers.
Professor Katina Michael, she's with the School of Computing and IT at the Uni of Wollongong. What a fantastic woman. What a great thinker, Trevor.
Wow. I mean, that's the kind of thinking you need.